Welcome to Whatever Works, our unique fortnightly podcast in which we talk about whatever works in our lives and in the lives of our community members. Find us at whateverworks.works. And why not join our community? Simply search for Whatever Works at MeWe.com and get stuck in.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, here we are.
So, what is there to report?
You see, you've thrown me now. Now I don't know whether we're recording or not. Now you've said turn the tape off. I'm like, well, am I making genuine small talk with Ted or am I recording a podcast?
Have you got a tape recorder? Have you got a reel to reel?
Oh, don't. I still say wind it back when I'm,
Yeah, there was a story that went through last week about reel-to-reels coming back, and I really loved my reel-to-reel back in the day. This is a bit of a better before, I suppose, but my reel-to-reel, I just adored it. It was so much fun.
Oh, and it's God, so, yes.
I'd love to get hold of one. You can buy them, but they're just rising and rising in price. If you're settling for a second-hand one, they're all over eBay. But, yeah.
Tail out.
Very, very nice.
Wind your tapes with the tail out so that when they sit on the shelf, you don't get that bleed in front of the music. You get it into the music so you can't hear it. Oh, yes.
Right.
Those were the days. Well, I guess we have started, haven't we? Hello, everybody.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Whatever Works. We're back again. It's show 242. It's the 9th of June. And whateverworks.works is our website, blah, blah, blah. And we'll see you on MeWe and let us know whatever works in your show. We could record this bit, couldn't we? And then just you could plug it in the edit.
Yes. I just wonder if people think, oh, I'll wind through this bit. I know. We need to make some incredibly fantastic announcement, you know, free Amazon vouchers for everybody who's listening in this opening section. So anybody who winds through will miss it.
Yeah, absolutely. You could plug your santabel.co.uk, as we haven't spoken about that for a while. That's still there. And anything come of that?
It's great. Do you know, I've actually got a Santa gig in a couple of weeks' time.
Ah.
I was approached through one of the websites I've joined by a lady who has a son who is obsessed with Christmas. He's a little 5-year-old and he's having his birthday and he wants Santa at his party. So you know, it's fantastic for me. It's a test gig because, as you know, thank you for bringing it up. You're going to wish you hadn't sent me going. I've been working hard on the Santa thing for the last several weeks. You know, new costume, new wig, new everything, putting it all together. So this is a fantastic test gig for me in July to see if the cool vest works and just to see if everything's okay and ready to go for December. So, yeah, it's going well.
Cool.
And as you say, santabel.co.uk is where you can find me.
Well done. And if you don't want Santa stuff, you can get Aidan at aidanbell.com.
Indeed.
And if you want to find out about our audio podcasts and all of our MeWe groups, they're all linked out at tedsalmon.com with my new look dark website. So head across there.
I misheard. I heard daft website. I said dark website.
Well, there is that as well, yeah. Absolutely. Almost as daft as whatever works. A quick, because we don't have I Wonder Who Bought It Anymore, a quick plug to remind people, please, pretty please, to use my my Amazon affiliate link. If you're buying on Amazon, all you need to do is go into tinyurl.com/AmazonTedUK. You shop as normal. And I don't know what you bought. I don't know who's bought it. They hide all the information from me now. But I do get some pennies, and it really helps me keep going and limping my way through to my pension in March 2030. Hurrah!
Here, here. And you know what I do? I have an extension, what do you call it, a tab, a favourite set up. So when I just click Amazon via Ted and in I go and I don't even have to worry about it.
I love you.
Well, let's not do that in the show. Right.
What's been going on with you then?
Lizzie, lovely Lizzie, Elizabeth Averley. Oh, can we call you Lizzie? I do hope that's not informal, I should say. Elizabeth Averley asked me the question, could I post some pictures of my pond? A bit of alliteration for you there. And I posted some pond pictures forthwith, or not quite so forthwith, actually. It took me a few days to get round to it. Apologies for that, Elizabeth. She very kindly asked to see some pictures, which I dug up. I found, see what I did there, dug up. up from the pond. At the time, I reminded myself that at the time of putting my pond together, I actually had a static camera in the house pointing through the window on a timer, and I was taking a series of time-lapse pictures. So I've got the whole process. So I put 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 pictures, which people have made some very kind comments about, and Elizabeth thanked me kindly for them. Thank you, Elizabeth, for thanking me. Apparently, Elizabeth is going to build her own pond project. Not as grand or outrageous or as ridiculously large as mine, I'm pleased to say. But we wish Elizabeth every good luck with that. And do please send us some pictures if you have anything to show, send us in due course of your construction of your project. But I enjoyed looking mine out and realising how well my pond has settled in. In the pictures I posted, you can see that it's a hole in the ground with the plastic sheet in it. But now, 3-4 years later, it really just looks like a natural pond that's always been there. So time is the clue here, Elizabeth. Build your pond now and then wait 2 or 3 years and it will be wonderful.
Very nice indeed. I'll put a link in the show notes to the post in MeWe where all that happens. I particularly like the third picture in the series where you're stopping for a drink and doing something very dubious with your right hand, I have to say. But we won't dwell on that.
I don't recall that picture. I'm no doubt drinking a cup of coffee. I think that's the one with the waterfall running in the background, which I finally got started, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I think that is, you're right. But it just looks funny because because the hand, your hand is obviously moving at the time. It looks very dubious. Anyway, there you go. I'm talking of hands, I burned my hand last week.
Yes, you did. You told me about that.
I put it into the MeWe group, so yeah, you probably know about it. 20 minutes under the tap was the tip, and I remember this 20 minutes under the tap. My late mum used to say that to me and say it really worked, and I used to kind of think, yeah, all right, surely 10 minutes is all right, and surely 5 minutes is all right. But actually, I've tried before doing less time, and it doesn't work. So anyway, I was cooking some soup in a plastic container in the microwave, which I do most days. I have soup most evenings. And for some reason, it clearly cooked it too much or too quickly or something. I went in there and grabbed it, like I always do, without much caution. And it just basically exploded all over my hand. And my hand was really bad. It was so painful. I really thought that I was going to be disfigured or at least have to go to A&E or something.
Yeah.
But sure enough, put it under the tap and I was panicking all the time it was under there. 20 minutes. I made myself. It's really, really boring just to stand there for 20 minutes with nothing to do. So I stuck it under there. And sure enough, when I went to bed, it was stinging a little bit still. But the next morning, absolutely nothing. I almost forgot that I'd actually done it. And apparently it's because the putting on the water on it, it stops the burning process and limits deeper skin tissue damage. That's what Gemma told me. So I guess that's what it does, and it works really well. So there's my TED's top tip for you. Don't forget the 20-minute rule, and don't put it under the hot tap.
Do you know what? Of course, I am deeply sympathetic, and I'm very pleased indeed to hear that you managed to handle this, what could have been a nasty incident, well. However, every silver lining has a cloud. 20 minutes of cold running water in the days when we are told to use as little water as possible and save where we can. Yeah. Can you not put it into just a bowl of ice water or just hold
apparently
an ice cube
not.
Against it?
No, apparently not. It doesn't do the same thing. I did explore all that, and it's the running water. But what you could do is put a bucket under your hand and keep the water to use for something else, I suppose.
What you want is that lovely thing that we used to do as kids when we thought we discovered perpetual motion with the siphon, with the what's it called? There's a term I cannot remember where you suck the water through the tube and then let go, and the water keeps flowing through the tube. You could do that, and you could just move it from bucket to bucket. I'm just thinking, you know, of course I'm deeply sympathetic of what happened to you, but I just think 20 minutes under a cold tap, that's a long time to be running a cold tap.
Having said that, some people stand under the shower for 20 minutes, don't they? So, you know, I mean, I don't. I'm in and out of the shower very quickly. 5-10 minutes absolutely at the most. But, you know, many people I've known in my lifetime would be in there 20 minutes and more.
Indeed. Indeed. It's very... Yes, what can one say? I'm glad your hand is better. Let's move on.
Yes. Let's move on to, oh, look, our favourite topic,
it
coffee.
It is. It's that coffee subject once again. Do you remember back in January, I brought a delicious decaf coffee concentrate? I told you that I was rediscovering iced coffee.
Yes.
And was drinking quite a lot of, you can get these.
We did a taste test on that,
Yeah, and that's right. And I was drinking a lot of this coffee concentrate that you can buy at Tesco, which of course you can make hot, but the advantage is you can also pour it into a glass of cold milk and have a wonderful iced coffee. And I was a little concerned because I was guzzling this stuff on a daily basis and wondering how much caffeine I was taking in, having in previous years moved away from caffeinated everything. Then I discovered Midnight Oil Decaf Coffee Concentrate, which is yummy, but is £16 for 500 mil, which is not terribly cheap. But I loved it, and it's wonderful. But I've now wanted to report on the show, and eventually here it comes, that Nescafé have now produced a decaf version of their espresso concentrated liquid. So you can now buy at Tesco for a much better price of £3.85.
Hurrah!
It's not 500 mil. I didn't write down in my notes how big it is, but it's certainly not 500 mil. It's a lot smaller than that. But it works out at about a quarter of the price of the Midnight Oil. The problem is, do you know what? Since writing these show notes, I have to confess I buckled and I ordered another Midnight Oil because for me personally, it just didn't taste as nice. And it is now an occasional treat. I'm no longer drinking it like it's going out of style. I'm just drinking it occasionally when it's a hot day and I let myself have an iced coffee. And it's so much nicer. I'm still drinking the decaf from Midnight Oil. But for those who are not as snobby as me, or Chris Kelly, I'm sure, and who just want a nice decaf concentrated coffee, go to Tesco and buy the Nescafé.
Yeah. And I do remember we did that taste test on it. I think I got the vanilla flavour one.
Yes.
And you got another flavour. I can't remember now. That must have been, a year ago probably?
Yes.
The vanilla one was really nice because it had that kind of, just a hint of the flavour of vanilla, which I really like. And I don't know if you remember the end of the story and the process, but I discovered that you're only supposed to keep it 3 weeks.
That's
even
right.
Even in the fridge.
Yes,
and
indeed.
I ended up chucking half of it away, fearful of... I mean, I'm sure it will probably be all right, but I'm a bit like that. If I've got some ham in the fridge that's one day over its eat-by date, I chuck it away.
Yeah, I mean, my attitude is I would agree with you with the ham, if you're talking about meat, certainly. But if you're talking about concentrated coffee, it's probably not too... I mean, for instance, if I buy myself, as I have done, 500 millilitres of Midnight Oil, I actually haven't opened this new one yet. But you're quite right. Once I've opened it, maybe I am then beholden to drinking it quite quickly.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting to know, wouldn't it? Because these, you know, I mean, a packet of biscuits has got an eat-by date on it, but that's just ludicrous. So they'll last forever, basically.
Yeah, I mean, until they... Sorry, after you, Ted.
Just say until they go blue, I was going to say.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge debate. I mean, I think you probably know there are restaurants in the world that their USP is that they only serve stuff that's past its sell-by date. The point being that so much stuff, it is purely on... I don't know whether it's just complete extortionism from the shops that they just want you to buy more things, or whether it's overly... Mm-hmm. Maybe it's over fear, because in nowadays where we sue everybody for everything, it's too risky for them to not put a sell-by date. But, you know, as I say, if it's raw meat or anything like that, and especially looking after a 90-year-old lady, I will, same as you, Ted, straight in the bin, no questions asked. But biscuits and tea... I mean, tea bags with a sell-by date. I mean, really? No. I mean, some things you just have to use and also my mother's often saying to me, my cheesecake's gone off. I say, no, it hasn't. Your cheesecake had a sell by date of today, but it'll be perfectly all right for another couple of days if you keep it in the fridge.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go. Coffee, we've done. And we are now moving on to America. Daniel, no, we're moving back to America because we were talking to Elizabeth Everly earlier.
Yes.
So Daniel B is next on bright room plastic storage drawers with casters. These simple $20 drawers work great for my closet storage. Cheap, small and easy to deal with. They are perfect in my car and light as a feather. I'm assuming he means in my car for transporting them. Yeah, I'll be storing light clothes in them so I don't have to worry about the weight distorting them over time. So, yeah, these are basically a plastic kind of set of drawers which you can roll about the place. And if you've got the space or the need to move stuff about in that way, then they look great. I wonder if they're difficult to put together. I can't imagine that they're going to come ready assembled.
Well, what it looks like to me is three large plastic boxes and then, as you say, a sort of shelf stroke drawer arrangement, so you can just stack all three on top of each other very firmly and strongly, yeah, and then wheel them around. So, yeah,
yeah.
A movable trolley for three large plastic boxes definitely has its use. And you know me and my plastic box fetish. What a good thing this is in the United States item, not one I could click a button straight away and buy it.
I mean, you could put anything you want in it, couldn't you? My thought goes to books, for example. You could have a little books trolley and move it between the lounge and the bedroom and the dining room or wherever you are.
Yes.
Just whatever you want to chuck in it. So, and it looks like they're really cheap. Well, if you're in America, I'm sure that there'll be British equivalents.
I think so. Don't tempt me.
I have bumped into Coca-Cola chopsticks for a blog entry for myself. And basically, if you click on the link, you'll see what it is. It's actually Coca-Cola have decided to make a pair of chopsticks, presumably mainly for people in the East. But essentially, it's in the shape of a classic Coca-Cola bottle. But at the bottom end, it turns into a pair of giant tweezers. Now, I didn't grow up with chopsticks. I'm a real Westerner, and my family always had, like, you know, meat and free veg kind of thing meals. But I did, when I was a teenager, start to use chopsticks, and I found that I could use them really easily. Although I don't use them from year to year now, almost decade to decade, whenever I pick a pair up, I go straight back into... I suppose it's a bit like riding a bike. You know, your brain just doesn't forget how to do it. And I'm absolutely fine with chopsticks. But for those who perhaps struggle with that or don't use them enough to get to know how to use them, perhaps the Coca-Cola gadget gimmick... chopsticks, which are a giant pair of tweezers, like I say, it'd be a nice little thing to have. Fancy some of these?
Do you know what? I'm exactly like you. Your chopstick history is exactly the same as mine. And once in a blue moon, if I'm in a Chinese restaurant, I really do enjoy eating with chopsticks and I can manage them. However, I have to say, these are not chopsticks at all, as you rightly point out.
No.
These are tweezers. Chopsticks chopsticks cross in the middle and are held in a certain way. And this isn't chopsticks at all. This is it's a giant pair of tweezers. So, I mean, if you just take the chopsticks element out completely and say these are eating tweezers, then yes, great fun. Especially if you're a Coca-Cola fan, I can absolutely see that these will sell well to Coca-Cola fans. But they ain't chopsticks.
I wonder why they're marketing them as chopsticks when they clearly aren't. But it's obvious that that's what they're doing. They're flogging them in that shape. I don't know. It just seems a bit odd. I agree with you.
Still using and still using.
I'm still using my crock pot slow cooker, which I brought to Whatever Works 209 in July 24. And it's a really good little slow cooker. Meals for one, sad old gits, Billy no mates. You know, when you're cooking for yourself, it's just the right size. particularly in the winter where you have lovely stews going on and those scrummy kind of soups and stews and casseroles and stuff. And it's still £14.99, I noticed. It's the same price as I paid back then. So it's nice to know there's one thing in the world that hasn't gone up in price. Because of no doubt what's going on in the Straits or Hormuz. Anyway, that's another story. Anyway, yeah. So I'm still using this 2 years on, almost daily. Well, maybe not daily, twice a week. And I think it's just a great little crock pot and it works beautifully well. And you can put it on low or high or off. it works a treat for me. Do you use a slow cooker?
I don't. I maybe should. Because I too am somewhat of a Billy Nomates. But I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, as I said in the last show, sometimes you do get what you don't pay for. I mean, 14 quid, 15 quid. I mean, that's an astonishing price. If, as you say, it's lasted all this time and served you so well and is an efficient cooking item, that is an incredible bargain.
It certainly is. I mean, it says it's reduced from £21.50, but actually, if you look at the history, it's always the same price. No doubt it's been pushed out from the crock pot store in China. I forgot about the warm. There's a warm setting as well. So if you want to not cook it, but just not let it get cold, there's another.
That's very useful. Oh, that's very good. Leave it there.
I never use that. I was going to say it does. And as was proved just now, I completely forgot it was there.
That's because you're a pig and you scoff the whole lot and don't need to keep it warm.
Yeah.
I tell you what, go on.
Hang on a minute. Just before we finish with that one, there is actually a bigger version of it as well. If you're not Billy Nomates, there's a 2.3 litre version of it. This is a 1.8 litre.
Yeah.
And that's currently 34 quid. And that just looks a bit... Yeah, it's designed differently. But essentially the same idea. So if you want a bigger one, there's that too. Your turn.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, mine costs, I've just looked at my calculator, 19.9 times as much as yours. Back in December 2023, show 168, I spent quite a lot of money, 244 quid, in fact, on a Braun Series 9 Pro Electric Shaver. I remember talking quite a lot about it and saying that I had been a Philishave man for many, many years, and I wanted a new shaver, and I'm assuming it must have been Black Friday time, you know, when everybody buys toothbrushes and shavers. Excuse me. And my choice eventually, after a lot of research, was the Braun Series 9. And I'm very happy with it. Cost me 244 quid. It's now gone up. Unlike your cooker, it now costs 318 quid if you want to buy one today. And it's wonderful. And I love it. And it's one of these shavers that's got its little stand that you just pop it into that charges it. So you never have to think about charging because it's always on charge when it's in its stand. Every now and again, when you think you've used it enough times, you can press the button on the stand and it runs through its automatic cleaning cycle. So it's pretty well keeps itself clean as well. I've used it for it'll be year number 3 come December. So 2.5 years so far. Excuse me, something's in my throat today. 2.5 years use. Very, very happy with it. I use it, again, not like you, not daily, but whenever I can be bothered to shave. And I'm still very happy with it. No problems at all. Highly recommended. And as for the changeover, I remember at the time saying, oh, well, I used to use the Philishave, which is these round heads, and now I'm using the Braun, which is the long and thin heads. But works a treat. No problem at all. Very happy with it.
Looks really classy. I remember you being really enthusiastic about it, and I was interested about that auto cleaning thing, because I seem to remember quizzing you on how on earth that works. Is it just by vibration
It's got a liquid in there. I think it's got a liquid that sort of dissolves the hairs. I mean, what's very highly recommended and what I always do before I clean it is I just take the top off and I blow out as much of the hair as I can so that there's only the residual hairs on the actual blades and on the area itself. Then I pop it in the machine and I think it, I don't know for a fact, but I'm assuming that it's got some sort of acetane-like substance that washes around it and dissolves away the hairs.
Right. Okay. And you can use it in the shower too?
You can. I've never needed to, but it is waterproof if you need it. to me.
And it looks like, from the Amazon picture, there's a case with a battery in it.
Oh,
did
yes.
Did you get that?
I forgot to talk about that. Yes, yes, mine came with the battery case. I got some sort, as I say, I got a Black Friday deal, so I got the whole bundle for a very good price.
Right.
Yes, the case is great fun. Again, I don't use it enough to know whether I really need it. I mean, I've taken it on holiday with me, and the battery's never run out, but I've never been away for more than sort of 4, 5, 6 days. The shaver could very well have lasted that time on its own, but it sits in its box, and the box has little LEDs that shows you the state of charge of the box, and the charge is good. And it, yeah, so charging aside, it's a good, strong, safe, protective box to and very, very classy looking as well. So yes, I got that too, and I'm very happy with that as well.
You perhaps get what you pay for with this one, certainly, because it does look really classy and solid and really well made. So
yes.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you're still using it.
Ted's top tips. Now, you've already had one Ted's top tip today, but go on, I'll give you another one.
We were talking in the week about positioning your fans. Well, I think we've done this before. It's a reminder. So actually, you're the master of this thing, because I think you were talking about doing it at your house before. But I stumbled into this article reminding me about it. And one of the best ways in hot days of getting hot air out of your house and the coolest possible air into it is to put one fan out by a window at one end, pointing inwards, that being the coolest air outside you can find, and then letting that flow through, and then having another fan at the other end by an open window, pointing out of the window. It's all very obvious.
Life in a wind tunnel, really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but in terms of physics, it all
yes.
makes sense,
yes,
doesn't
of course.
It? You suck in the cold air at one end, you let it flow through, and at the other end, it pushes that air out again. And so, if you're positioning fans this summer when it's going to get hot, which apparently it is again this weekend. You know, maybe positioning fans is something worth considering. But I think you do this, don't you?
I did. I mean, unfortunately, my mother is very susceptible to drafts. Even in a heat wave, if you put a fan on, she says, oh, nasty draft, turn it off. So it's a bit tricky to do that. But yes, I have done that. Even without the draft, without the fan element, I tend to open the door at one end of the house and a window at the other and just let nature push the air through. But yes, the principle is excellent. I mean, you've got to have, of course, you've got to have a house layout. Your feng shui has to allow you to have, as you say, a window at one end and another one at the other. But I can certainly concur. It does work indeed.
Yeah, very good. Anyway, there's a tip for everyone if you are getting too hot and can't find a way out, particularly if there's no breeze at all. That is just the worst. It's really flat and still and there's no breeze,
yes.
no wind,
yes.
and you've got to kind of try and create your own.
Indeed.
Anyway.
Yeah, I sometimes stand at one end of the house waving the door open and closed, like a ginormous fan, like, you know, old-fashioned fan, like a waving fan. By the way, everybody should remember the amazing trick which is catching on these days, which is great, which is, of course, get up as early as you can in the morning. That's the hard part for me. Fling open all the doors and windows, let as much cold air in as you can, and then the moment the outside temperature starts to rise higher than the inside temperature, close everything. Doors, windows, curtains, close yourself up into a box and keep that cool air for the rest of the day.
Unless you're in a static caravan.
Time for a jingle, I think. Ed Hauser. Do you know, is it House or Hauser? It's one of those things I never will learn.
Call him House.
House, okay. Mr. House brings us the Nuvarb Premium Bike Kickstand. Ed says, I needed to fit the boys' bikes with kickstands, so I nabbed two of these from Amazon for £8.99 each, not expecting too much. So far, though, I'm very impressed. The nylon-looking inner sleeve prevents you from putting too much pressure on the bar, and as long as you're sensible, it's very easy to fit them. The only snag, he says, was that initially the mechanism for adjusting the length of the foot was stuck in place on the first one. But disassembling and reassembling fixed this in short order. It took less than 20 minutes to fit both. That's impressive because bike stands are one of those things that have always impressed me, that this huge weight of a bike leaning down on one single stand works and that the bike doesn't fall. So to be able to buy these after the event and fit them to a bike, that's impressive. An impressive price and an impressive kickstand. And if I had a bike and it didn't have a kickstand, I'd buy one, Ed.
My little moped, my scooter's got a side stand thingy, which obviously was fitted at factory, so it should be good. But whenever I use it, I kind of look at it and think twice. You know, compared to the central stand, where you kind of, you know, put it down properly and lift the bike up, and it's very, very firm. When I get home, I always use the central stand. But if I, like, drop into Tesco's, I almost always put the side stand down, and as I say, I look at it and think,
Well, I dare say your scooter is probably considerably more heavier than the Ed House's boys' bikes, you know, so there's a difference there.
Anyway, they look really nice.
Indeed.
Well done, Ed.
Thank you.
Good shout. I'm going to put into Judge Barton's cheapest chips the 180 times 25 litre pedal bin liners. The backstory of this is that I always get... My dad could never find his pedal bin liners in Tesco, so he asked me to go and pick them up, and which is no problem. I went to get some last week, and they didn't have any. So I thought, right, Amazon. So I went onto Amazon, and I had a look for 25 litre pedal bin liners, which is about the right size. £5.99 for 180, which we worked out afterwards is about a third of the price of the Tesco price, even if they have them in Tesco. And the only difference really is that they don't have a tie thing on the top, so they're just straight. And also, they are transparent instead of white, but it's really no problem. But yeah, a third of the price, and they're perfectly good. But you know, they're virtually the same, except for those differences, and absolutely perfect. So we got this great big packet arrived with enough pedal bin liners to keep us going till 2042. I'll try and get my dates right. Your turn.
I'm just picking my jaw up off the floor. That is extraordinary, Ted. I have only one thing to say. 180!
Hey.
That is a phenomenal number. For £6. I shall put them in my Amazon basket this moment.
Excellent. Well, as long as you've got a pedal bin the right size, I suppose.
Ted, even daft Aidan Bell isn't going to buy 180 bin liners that he doesn't need. Oh, dear me. Move on.
I want one of those.
Do you remember bread bins?
I'm still laughing. The bin bags. Sorry, do continue.
Yes. We're sticking in the kitchen so you can laugh some more. Do you have a bread bin? Do you use a bread bin?
I used to use a bread bin. I remember in the early days of Whatever Works, there was a bread bin that I was talking... It was probably during COVID when the world and his mother were making bread, and I probably got a bread bin at that point to keep it in, because, of course, homemade bread needs to be kept fresh a lot more than shortbread does. So, but no, we've not used a bread bin for some many, many months.
No, nor have I. And I keep my bread in the fridge now. It just seems to be more sensible to me, particularly as the climate gets warmer and warmer. Anyway, laying that aside, I stumbled into this double-decker bread bin, and I really like the look of it. It looks so retro and vintage, and I can imagine my grandmother using this in the 1960s or something.
Do you know what it looks like? It looks like you had a stereo that you got rid of because you bought your new DVD player, and you thought, oh, tell you what, let's repurpose it and put bread in it. It looks like an old-fashioned stereo radio cabinet.
Yeah, yeah. But lovely wood, and that glass, even the glass windows on the front is like lined and etched, and just the whole thing just makes it look to me like something that I want one of those fits really nicely. And I'm not even convinced I'd use it. I could put it inside the fridge, I suppose. But it just looks lovely to me. Beautifully made and retro and gorgeous.
Hang on,
there
how
you
big
go.
Is this thing? Would you get that in your fridge? Or if you did, would you be able to get anything else in at all?
No, not at all. But on the link in the show notes, you can link through to various different variations on this, like pine ones. And the one that I was looking at was a kind of darker brown one, but there are pine ones and there are single-decker ones, and they come in black. Oh, yeah, all sorts. It's just, if you're in for a bread bin, then... you know, there are... Oh, that looks really nice as well. Oh, no, I must stop shopping.
Right. Listen. Chris Kelly, he wants a Volvo EX60 P12. I had a Volvo SC60 before I got my new car. Chris says, I know that Aidan got a new car. There you are, he knew. Did I tell you, Ted, I got a new car? I've long thought, said Chris, that EVs are the future, but limited range and long charge times made them impractical for me when I was a high-mileage driver. However, the world has moved on. I've not had a car for over 5 years. I opted for two motorbikes instead. But if I had the money, I'd have one of these. Not only does it come with the lovely Scandi minimalist interior, but the infotainment system is powered by Nvidia and integrates Gemini. It has a great-looking exterior, far nicer than BMW's huge nostrils or Mercedes' enormous look-at-me grille. It can deliver a notional 503 miles of range, that's good, and in charging, add up to 200 miles in 10 minutes if you've got a high-speed charger. And the best bit is it has 670 brake horsepower. So it'll do well in traffic light drag races. I've got to pop in there and say, my wonderful Polestar has 403, I think. And that's more than... it's wonderful. As Chris points out, it's good fun. If you put your foot down, you get G-forces across your face. But 670? When's it going to stop? Anyway, Chris concludes, the top model isn't out until the end of the year, so I have time to save up the nearly 70 grand.
Wow.
That is quite a car. And as a Volvo driver of many years, I'm certainly very envious and think, envious. He hasn't actually got one, have you, Chris? But I like Chris, I would certainly love to have one, although I am deeply happy with my Polestar. 503 miles is a very good range, but I must point out, I drove up to Warwickshire this week, again to do with my Santa. I went to see two lovely ladies who sorted out my wig and beard for me, but I had to make a trip to Warwickshire and back, which was 200 miles round trip. I did it in one go. I charged the car at home overnight for peanuts, and then I did a 200-mile trip the next day, and I came home with 7% remaining. So my car's mileage, if you do the maths, is 215 miles, which is nowhere close to Chris's 503. But I've never really understood this idea that your car must take you from John O'Groats to Land's End without a charge. Why? People drive petrol cars and stop and put petrol in. And as Chris points out, it takes 10 minutes now to charge a car with a high-speed charger. So I'm really not quite sure why the mileage is a problem anymore. But it's a lovely car, Chris, and I totally share your envy of it. I want one too. What about you, Ted? You don't drive at all except your scooter, do you?
No. I sometimes drive my dad's car if I need to, but I don't really go anywhere. But 7% remaining, isn't that a bit hairy? I think I'd be very twitchy about that.
It was hairy, but the situation was I knew that I was going home. I had no appointments. Even if I did get stuck and have to call the AA, it wouldn't matter. I'm on my way home. I've got a gig to go to or anything. Not only that, I know the chargers. There's one in Stevenage that I would have passed. There was one before that in Bedford that I would have passed. So I knew that if I suddenly decided I was panicking, I could have pulled up to a charger and given myself a tiny top up before getting home. So I was on safe territory.
I know nothing about EV cars. It's a topic that we could talk about probably at length. I've got no idea how it works or how much it costs to do what it's doing. Or this one that Chris is talking about gives 200 miles in a 10-minute charge. Does yours do that?
I'd have to do the maths. No, it's not that quick. But again, I've never been concerned about, oh, quick, I must charge my car up, I must get back on the road, quick. I'm very happy to put the car on charge, wander in, go to the loo, buy myself a cup of coffee, have a little look around the shops and go back out to the car, by which time it has charged. And in terms of cost, I mean, I can give you instant comparison. My old XC60 Volvo that I drove, I calculated that it cost me 21 pence a mile. My new Polestar, when charging electric at home overnight, costs me 3 pence per mile.
Really? Wow.
So there's
That's a huge difference.
It's enormous difference. I mean, I don't mind sharing with the group. I did my tax last year. 2 years ago, when I drove my petrol car, my diesel car, for the whole year, and I was doing quite a lot of mileage then with work, I paid, I think it was something like £3,000 over the year in petrol. £3,500, I think, across the year in petrol. Huge amount of money. Then I had a year when I was crossing over between the two cars, so the maths is difficult to work out. This last year that I've just done my accounts for, I spent £490 on electricity.
Yeah.
That's a
You did mention that before, actually.
Did I?
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's no problem. It's just that it came back to me while you were talking.
Yeah.
It's a huge difference, isn't it?
It's an enormous difference. And also, it's such a wonderful drive. I mean, forget the cost. If it was free to drive either car, I would never go back to an ICE car now. I would always drive electric because it's just such a lovely, quiet, environmentally friendly, pleasurable drive. I cannot see a reason not to want to drive electric. Amen. That's it. I'm stopping now.
I'll have to think about it for my next scooter.
Yes, absolutely.
Because my scooter is a 4-stroke petrol engine, and although I get over 100 miles to the gallon out of it, so it's not, in terms of economy, it's no problem at all. But I'm sure that when it comes to replacing it, there'll be more electric ones out there than there are now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and I mean, I've never ridden a bike or a motorbike or a scooter in my life, but I assume the volume is a lot louder when you're on a bike than when you're in a car. Therefore, the contrast between motor, ICE and electric must be huge. If you got on an electric scooter, you'd be driving thinking, how's this working? I can't hear anything. It would be wonderful.
Yeah, and driving over little old ladies who can't hear you coming.
Well, that's the other thing. That's what I find ironic is that they build EVs. They build speakers onto the outside of the car that produces a noise so that as the car approaches, people can hear. I mean, of course, you can't not do that. Otherwise, there'd be people getting killed all the time. But it seems very counterintuitive to have this wonderful, quiet car, but then have to build external speakers to make a noise.
Yeah, completely bonkers. Talking about speakers and talking about Chris Kelly, he also would like a pair of Lin 360 speakers.
Ted, that's a brilliant link. That was one of your best. That was fabulous.
Thank you. Autographs later. He wants a pair of these speakers anyway. I've had my collection of speakers for about 25 years, he says. This is just a quick one. Well, I still think they do a good job. Maybe it's time to upgrade. The only trouble with these Lin 360 speakers, and in keeping with I want one of those, is that they're $96,000. Could you really, Chris, tell the difference between, right, I buy that you could tell the difference between $96,000 speakers and a 50 quid speaker, but could you tell the difference between, say, one's half that price? It just seems bonkers to me. And I personally have never heard of Lin, L-I-N-N. Obviously, I've been living under a stone.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, but can you really tell the difference between running in trainers you bought from Primark or trainers you bought from Nike? You know, you're absolutely right, Ted. You know, some people can. I mean, you know, I, for instance, hate MP3s. I can always, always, always tell the difference between an MP3 and a Wave. And I will never, you know, that's just... But some people can't. And so I guess it's the same with speakers. People who have really acute ears, work in the music industry or have great interest in music and can tell the difference, then fair enough. But no, not up to 96,000 quid. Not at all. I'm sorry. That's just ridiculous.
Anyway, thank you, Chris.
And finally, in this bumper-packed edition of I Want One of Those, I really do want, and I'm bringing this to the show because I'd be very interested in some discussion and some debate, and moreover, help, suggestions, warnings, opinions, tips, tricks, all gratefully received. I really do want a pair of the forthcoming Google glasses. Smart glasses have been around for quite a while now, and I know they've had a rather bumpy history and not been very successful and not very well reviewed or very well liked or very well taken up. But I am now seeing all the blah blah about the new Google glasses that are coming out later in the year, and I really want them. I cannot offer a watertight, practical, sound reason why I should have a pair. There isn't one. I just think it would be such a joy to have them, to have one that can do, you know, give you a navigation in your ear, can see where you're walking and say, no, you just missed the turning, go back and turn left. That would be a joy. To sit in a restaurant, because I go abroad a lot, as people know, to sit in a foreign restaurant and look at a menu and have your glasses read it to you in your own language. So many little things, none of which are necessary, all of which are first world issues, but all of which would really give me pleasure. I'm genuinely thinking about Google glasses for the future. They've got a apparently there are two types coming out. One is it's made by a company called something Monster, Scary Monster, I think. Rather nasty looking, over-the-top, sunglasses-esque glasses.
Gentle Monster,
which I wouldn't like. The other company, which you're going to tell me, because you're obviously on the website,
Warby Parker,
they make a pair of glasses that look slightly geeky, slightly sort of round frame. I think they call them New York coffee shop style. I could be all right with those. I mean, I've proven that the two Ronnie look works for me. These seem to be sort of two Ronnies in round. So I would be content to wear those, and really look forward to the autumn. If they come out and they're 10,000 quid, well, there we are. They're nice idea, never mind. But if they're within financial grasp, I want some. And I thought, well, Ted Salmon must be the man, you know, caretaker of tech addicts, etc. What do you know, or what do you think of these glasses, Ted?
I haven't really looked into it, to be honest. The Google Glass glasses, when they first came out, were $2,500, but that was about 10 years ago.
Yes.
So, you know, you could be looking at least that, if not more.
Really? I mean, what I've read, sorry to interrupt, what I've read in the blah blah on the web is that they're expecting it to be between $600 and $900.
Well, fine, okay.
Which
so
comes
great.
Down to what, £400 to £600?
A lot of this is to do with supply and demand. So mm-hmm. Google Glass, I don't know if you remember, but you had to go on a waiting list to get Google Glass, and they only made so many, and you had to prove that you were a developer, and it was all, you had to jump through loads of hoops in order to get a pair of the Google Glass glasses. So it was very different then. And if they're 900 quid or less, then great, absolutely. But I am guilty of having not looked into this yet, because I suppose partly because it's not here yet. And
yes.
I guess that Tech Addicts podcast, as we get closer to the release, we will be covering it, and we'll be seeing what it does and how it does it, and comparing it to the ones that are already out, including
yes.
the Meta ones. Mm-hmm. The Meta ones are the ones that most people kind of shout and scream about at the moment, saying
yes.
that they're really good.
I believe these are sort of competition to Meta. And the interesting thing about these is that they don't have a built-in screen, which is fine. I don't want that. That's a step too far
no.
for me. These are audio only. So, well, I'm on it. And if I may put out a plea, if anybody listening knows about these or has an interest in these, any thoughts or comments would be very gratefully received, because I am very genuinely looking into it. In fact, I'm going to even start saving money now.
Very, very good indeed. Right. OK, then. Next is a jingle.
Better before.
I was talking to my 89-year-old dad the other day and making sandwiches for him. And I said to him, how many slices would you like? And he said to me, I'll just have a round. And I said to him, what does that mean? How many slices is that? He said, well, a round is one slice of bread, but actually he wanted two. So that I said, well, if you wanted two slices of bread, then why did you say a round? Because a round would be one slice of bread, you just said. It got really confusing. So I took it to Gemma, of course. And it turns out that there's a bit of history to this, which is baked into British baking terminology. And there's some kind of, you know, old bakery definitions and terms kicking about, which we'll now explain, hopefully, between us.
OK, I will rise to your bait. Yeah, Gemini began with the subheading, the traditional round of bread. Historically, bread didn't come in uniform, square, plastic-wrapped supermarket loaves. It came from the baker as a large, circular, dome-shaped loaf, like a cob or a boule. When you sliced into a circular loaf like that, you were actually literally cutting a round off the loaf. So, back in the day, a round of bread literally meant one single slice. If your father grew up with unsliced, round loaves, then that association sticks hard. One slice equals one round.
At the same time, in British culinary slang, especially in cafes and traditional tea rooms, a round of sandwiches, inverted commas, refers to the unit of food made from two slices of bread. If you order a round of cheese sandwiches, you would expect a complete sandwich made out of two slices of bread cut into triangles or halves or whatever.
So Gemini sums up at the end by saying, because of these dual meanings, your dad is essentially using the word round for two different stages of the process. Before it's made, a round is a single slice of bread from the old circular loaf days. So two individual slices equals two rounds. But after it's made, the finished product is a round of sandwiches. So when he points to two slices of bread and says that's two round, he's counting the individual slices. But when it's served as a finished cut sandwich, he's shifting to the cafe terminology where the whole assembly is a round. It's definitely a bit of linguistic trap, but it's very authentic, old-fashioned British way of looking at it.
I put this, once I discovered all this, I put it to my dad and I said to him, I just told him what we just said. And he said, yeah, that makes sense because, I'm 89 years old. And in those days, we did have bread that was round shaped and not in a plastic thingy. And no doubt that. But I did say to him that if you have a round loaf and you take a slice off of it and you slice it downwards through the loaf, that's not going to be round, is it? And he did agree with me. In order to get a round piece of bread, you'd have to turn it sideways and cut through it the other way, wouldn't you? See what
now,
I mean?
We're not at home to Mr. Pedantic. I tell you what, Ted, in final word, because your father is 89 years old, this only proves that he has been around.
Whatever.
I'm going to go to the late Judge Barton again this time and highlight his bike light that he brought to the show, which was show 93, which we were next on, in October 2019. And this was a really nifty looking light, and he used it extensively and really liked it. It's really bright, 1200 lumens, and it's got a big battery in it, 4400 milliamp hours. It's also one that dorks can put into a strap and put around their head, that he was using it for on his bike handlebar, because he was a really keen cyclist, as we know, and he was raving about it. And if you look at the pictures on the Amazon page, which I'll link to, he confirmed at the time that it does indeed look pretty much as bright as they're claiming it does when it's pointing down the road in front of you. Unfortunately, it's not for sale anymore in Amazon, so I can't tell you even how much it costs. But I thought I would highlight that because it was something that whatever worked, and presumably whoever's using it now, it still works.
Do you know what? I have to jump in as a quick side point here. Do you remember on the show I've talked 2 or 3 times now about a very cheap headlight that Steve Litchfield brought that was only £6 that I was so impressed with? Well, I found it. It hasn't gone down the hole in the world. I opened the frunk of my new car. I've got a new car, by the way. And it was sitting there with all my emergency bits and pieces. The headlight.
You opened the what?
frunk. An electric car frunk. Doesn't have an engine in a bonnet as a conventional car does, so the bonnet has some space in it that can be used as a boot. So the front boot is called the frunk.
There, oh, as in front and... As a front trunk. And a trunk.
Yeah, the front trunk.
A front trunk. So really. We never had that applied to Volkswagen Beetles or Caravanettes.
No, that's true.
That's a marketing term, that is, to trap people like you.
It's an EV term, dear. But anyway, we digress. I found in the frunk Steve Litchfield's, or my, thanks to Steve Litchfield, old £6 headlight, and it still works. And talking of Steve Litchfield, back to the show, back to this one, back to Whatever Works, show 93, 2019, Steve Litchfield brought what he called a Blue Peter radiator kludge, which was basically using some aluminium foil to reflect the heat of his radiator. Rather than letting it go straight up into the room, he would have a sort of angled piece of cardboard covered with the silver foil that allowed the heat to be pushed out into the room. I just wanted to highlight that, not because it per se was so clever, but because I feel an affinity with Steve as a sort of Heath Robinson-esque lover. The idea that if something doesn't quite work, you don't look for another one on Amazon that does what you want. You simply say, well, how can I just adapt this slightly to do what I want? What sort of kludge, in inverted commas, can I do? Have I got enough gaffer tape and glue and bits of paper and cardboard and wood and initiative to just put something together that works for me? And this was a very good example of that. Hats off to Steve for finding out for doing that. And I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of the Heath Robinson-esque kludge. So I just thought I'd bring that onto the show.
Let's hope you don't have a show house. One last thing that I spotted from this show, and I brought it to the show. It's a canvas travel bag, and I've clicked through to the link on Amazon, and I kind of vaguely remember having this. How long ago was this? 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And do you know, I obviously have still got it somewhere, but I don't. I've no idea where it is. I reckon it must be in the garage somewhere up on the eaves. But I do remember it being a really good bag. And when I was kind of travelling around and moving about a bit more, it was a cracking bag. It was really big and it was really sturdy. I'm going to go into the garage and have a look and see if it's there somewhere. But yeah, the canvas travel bag, which is also no longer for sale.
I want to put, I don't know quite what it is I'm putting into 101. I'll tell the story and then we can decide what's going in the bin. I needed to engage a video editor. I've got a video on my Santa page, which is wonderful and I'm very happy with it, but there was a tiny little error that was beyond my ability to fix. And so I decided to reach out, as they say, into the world of social media and find a video editor talented in AI who could fix it. Eventually, I'm glad to say I have managed to find someone and they're in the process of doing so. But what I want to put into Room 101 is the fact that when you put a post out, which clearly says, this is the job that I want doing, how much would it be? Or you put out a post saying, this is the job that I want doing, and somebody comes back and says, yes, I could do it, and you reply saying, super, what's your price? You don't get a price. You get, oh, well, what's your budget? Or as you suggested, you get, well, what was the best price you got somewhere else? Or you get, how much have you got to spend? And I don't want to barter and bargain. I just want them to tell me what it costs. If I can afford it, I'll do it. If I can't, I won't. As a self-employed freelancer myself, if somebody comes to me and says, would you appear for Santa at my party? For instance, the party I mentioned at the beginning of the show. I sent the lady a message saying, this is what I charge. And she wrote back saying, that's lovely, would you do the party, please? I didn't say to her, well, how much money have you got? What do you think your son's worth? What was the last Santa charging? I hate this. I hate this attitude and I want to put it into Room 101. There.
I guess that's true. I guess it's to do with the climate we live in and the modern world, which is that people are vying for work. I mean, if for example, if you were completely making a living out of what you do with the Santa thing, mm-hmm. and you were jolly well making sure that someone else wasn't doing it cheaper than you, and you were wanting to undercut them, you may have a different approach. And I'm sure that is possibly the approach that many people that are just desperate to get work and stay in work, they don't want people to go elsewhere. So they'll say, well, you know, it's basically a let's negotiate, isn't it? Saying,
yes.
And I do this with the magazine that I'm the editor for. You know, I'll very often say to people, this is the real price, but, you know, we can come down a bit, or, you know, it's about negotiation. But saying a hard line, what's your budget, or what's the best price you've got elsewhere? What's the best price you've got elsewhere is something that they do on these really annoying insurance quote sites. If you phone up an insurance broker, that's the first thing I say, and you think, oh, for goodness sake. And so,
yes,
when I have had to do that for insurance in the past, I tend to say to them, I haven't got one yet, you're the first. So that cuts through their crap. But I do agree with you, yeah.
I tend to just, people who won't tell me the price, I'm saying, well, sorry then, you've lost my business, I'm going elsewhere. Thank you.
Stuff off, you git.
All words to that effect, yes. Oh, win C. Perfect.
Philip Ray wants to give a gold star to the National Archives. I'm currently in the UK. I think he lives in Malaysia. I'm sorting out the house after my mother passed away a few years ago and came across a medal from World War One, which was awarded to my grandfather. Using Copilot, my wife entered a photo of the medal. It said that the recipient's details should be on the side and that you can use this information to get more information about it from the UK National Archives, which I'll link to in the show notes. Sure enough, his name, regiment and service number were on the edge of the metal. Entering this onto the website of the National Archives and having to register enabled me to go to download a PDF copy of the medal's issuing citation, and I discovered that he had served in Egypt. So, he says, gold star to the National Archives, and if you find any old medals, it's well worth looking up on this website to get more information, and presumably other stuff as well, not just people's medals, but the National Archives. I did have a quick look at it, and I had no idea it was there, but it's obviously a national treasure trove and Pandora's box of stuff that somebody is putting together. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't. It's just a pleasure when something as massive as that works. You know, I mean, similarly, I've been impressed with the government's website. I mean, the government is huge and there's so much stuff going on. And yet they have a website that's easy to follow, that works well, that's clear guidance, and you get what you went on to find. So it's just a pleasure when something like that works.
On the other hand, it's a bit Big Brotherish. There's always a different. There's always two sides of a coin. There's always two sides to a medal.
As I've said on the show before, you know, if people have got nothing better to do than read my contacts list, well, then go knock yourself out.
Yeah. Right, we're done now. We've done this show, and we will be back in 3 weeks' time, depending on available content. Yes, it's up to you. Well, and us. And we will we'll bring you another hour of claptrap and mayhem when we do. Whateverworks.works is our website. AidanBell.com is where you'll find Aidan, and TedSalmon.com is where you'll find me, where you'll also find links to the all the podcasts we do and all the MeWe groups and all of that. And if you want to buy me a copy, which is something I never say much on Whatever Works, if you want to buy me a copy for all that I do and keeping it all rolling, then please do that. That is at, where is that? Oh, yeah, paypal.me/TedSalmon. So paypal.me/TedSalmon, and I'll be very grateful for you buying me a coffee or a latte or anything large in the coffee line. Thank you again. So last word to you, Aidan. What have you got to tantalise us with?
Well, while you've been talking, I've been making some arrangements, and Steve Litchfield and I are going to move into a show house together and cludge the living daylights out of it, that it becomes unrecognisable. What a joy that would be.
Yeah. I can't imagine having bits of foil sticking out of every radiator.
Oh,
but each to their own.
Love it, love it. What's that thing? Does it move? Yes. Is it meant to? No. Gaffer tape. Does it move? No. Is it meant to? Yes. WD-40. With WD-40 and gaffer tape, you can conquer the world.
Yeah. Right, OK, we're done then, and we'll see you in 3 weeks' time. One last thing to say, as always, don't forget...
Whatever works,
works! That wasn't together, was it?
It didn't work.
Arr, arr, arr.